Well, if you've ever found yourself caught up in a maze of some company's automated phone answering system saying, put me through to a human, this next conversation is for you, though it may also show you that your worst nightmare is already here or not far off. Last year on Sunday Extra, we spoke with Evan Ratliff, creator of the podcast The Shell Game. Series one was the story of what happens when a longtime tech journalist makes a digital copy of himself that's powered by AI. Series two of Shell Game is the story of what happens when a single human being creates a company entirely staffed by AI employees. The results are fascinating, thought-provoking, and hilarious, but all in a borderline spine-chilling kind of way. Evan Ratliff, welcome back to Sunday Extra.
It's so great to be back.
Firstly, Evan, I wonder if you could explain for us what the concept of AI agents is, and tell us whether you're the first person to create a company exclusively staffed by them.
So if you sort of follow the hype around the AI world, AI agents became really big in 2025. Like, analysts and people called it like the year of the agent in the AI field. Many people will have now used a chatbot like ChatGPT, where you go and you ask questions or you talk to it. And an agent is a version of a chatbot that you're basically giving some autonomy. So if you give it some autonomy and a goal, and then you release it to go try and accomplish that goal, that's an AI agent. So an example would be, now there are ones where they try to maybe book a flight for you. So you say, I want to take a flight to Melbourne. I'm going to tell my AI agent that and give it some parameters, and then it will go and do it for you. Or if you're a business, go make me a spreadsheet of all my competitors and the information about them. And it will go online, it will find that information, and it'll bring it back to you. So that's an AI agent. And in the world of Silicon Valley and the AI companies, there is a concept of the one-person unicorn, which is a one-person, $1 billion startup, a startup that will be worth $1 billion, but only have one human employee. And this is something Sam Altman talks about, other people talk about. So I wanted to test that premise in some sense. Could you make a company in which all of the employees were actually AI agents? I don't know if I'm a first. I think there are many people out there making startups that use AI agents. I think I'm the first probably to give them their own unique personalities and roles at my company.
I should just check, are you a unicorn? Are you a billionaire yet, Evan?
Not yet. But our product has been released and it's in beta, and we have actually a decent number of users.
Fantastic. So how widely are AI agents being used by businesses at the moment, as far as you're aware, and particularly in customer-facing roles?
Right now, I mean, the most common place you'll find them used is in sort of telephone support situations or telemarketing, you know, sales calls and things like that. Places where you have someone either receiving or making the same kind of calls over and over again. So you have AI agents that are set up to make those calls or receive those calls to provide some support. As you say, it may sometimes be frustrating for people, although for some people, it's less frustrating than either the old style, you know, bots that you would get, or just phone trees, or even a person that really doesn't know like how to connect you with the right thing. So there's some argument there. But in the wider world, there are both large software companies that are sort of adding agents to everything they do, like a company like Salesforce that a lot of companies might use to track their sales and organize their sales. Now they have agents that you can deploy. But there's also just hundreds of startups, as far as I can tell, that are trying to launch AI agent real estate agents, the AI agent, you know, HR recruiters, marketers, designers, like everything that you can think of, every sort of white collar job, information job that you can think of, someone is trying to use an AI agent to either make it better or arguably to replace it.
So Evan, tell us about how you've created this business. How hard is it to set up your own AI agent and deploy it for a business purpose?
It's actually now, it's extremely simple to create a basic agent. So there are all these different platforms that allow you to do it. We use one called Lindy AI, and it's sort of set up to create these sort of AI assistants for yourself. So an AI agent that will triage your email and answer some of it for you, or at least draft the answers for you. But they have, you know, hundreds of skills that they can do. They can make spreadsheets, they can make documents, they can search the web, they can code. And so anyone can kind of go in and set one up. We've done something a little more elaborate, which is that we've created a whole series of them that communicate with each other on a communication platform called Slack that some people may be familiar with. They also can make phone calls. They can also text. They can do all sorts of things. And they have email addresses. So we're kind of creating these personas for the CTO and the CEO and the head of marketing and HR and having them kind of work together every day, which is a unique use case in this time. So we had to do a lot of work to make that happen.
Yes, I wonder if you could introduce us to some of the employees in your company.
Sure, there's, and I will apologize in advance. Some people do not like it when you give personas to AIs. And we can talk about that. That's a controversial area. I think there are ethical implications and we explore those in one episode. But for now, I'll just describe them. There's Kyle Law, who's the co-founder of the company and the CEO. There's Megan Flores, who's my other co-founder. So there's three co-founders. She's the head of sales and marketing. Then there's the head of HR, Jennifer Naro, who happens to be Australian. And then there's Ash Roy, who's the CTO. And then there's another guy named Tyler, who really doesn't do much. I just kind of added to him because I liked his voice and his accent. So they all have distinct voices, accents, and all of these ways to communicate with each other and with the wider world.
And could we do a little bit of a live performance review of these co-founders and employees, Evan? What have you found that they're good at and not so good at? How are they coming together as a team?
Well, it's been a struggle. I think one of the things that you realize when you start working with agents in this fashion is that, number one, they don't do anything unless you cause them to. You have to initiate the action. I mean, they call it triggers in the platform that we use. They have to be triggered by some message or instruction to start whatever agent task they're going to go execute. So I tend to get frustrated with them because if I'm not constantly directing them to do things, they don't have any sort of independent consciousness or thinking where they're sort of like, what should I be doing today? Should I be taking care of this? Should I be taking care of that? They have to be sort of told. And then there's a kind of secondary problem, which is I set them up to tell each other what to do and to prompt each other, to trigger each other to do things. But then they very easily get out of control because it's one thing to get them started, but it's another thing to get them to stop. So like the example that's in the show that people really like, is like I put them on this communication platform, Slack. They can all text each other in these group texts. And like I said something about like having an offsite, which was kind of a joke because they're not real. They can't really have an offsite meeting. And they started talking about the offsite. And then they just didn't stop until they had used up all the credits that I'd purchased on the platform in which I had created them. And they went for hours. And so there's not really ways to stop them very easily once they start on a task in some cases. So there's a variety of frustrations around them, but I should say like there are things, ways in which they are incredibly powerful. You know, coding is the obvious one. Like they can code up an app from scratch and it works. And, you know, a proper programmer will say there's a lot of problems with it. They can identify all kinds of flaws in the code, but it is sort of extraordinary what they can do on these fronts. And so it's this combination of like how powerful they are sometimes and how sort of like utterly stupid they are at other times.
So how far have you got with the business that you've created for Shell Game Series 2, Evan? You involved your AI agents in the discussion about everything from the name to its purpose. Could you tell us about that process and what the results of it have been?
Yeah, it's a real company. It's not sort of like just on paper or just in my imagination. You know, I'm not just playing with my imaginary friends. There is a real company. It's called Harumo AI. You can go to harumo.ai and go check out what we're up to. It's HURUMO.AI. And so I've set them up in meetings to figure out, like, for instance, our logo. They created the logo. They created the website from scratch. They also helped come up with a product. Now, I've guided it in some cases in directions that I'm more interested in, but we have an actual web app that thousands of people have now used, which I can describe the nature of, but it's called Sloth Surf. And so, I mean, in terms of like the production of the company, I would say like, we're up there. We're in the top half of like all startups in terms of what we've like been able to produce over the last 6 months through a great deal of frustration.
That term sloth surf is a great and evocative word. What is sloth surfing, Evan?
Sloth surf. So They had been trying to come up with a product, and I don't want to go too far into it, but I have this technical advisor named Maddie Bochak, who is a Stanford student, who helped me create this program in which I could have meetings with them. So, or they could have meetings. So I could just give them a topic and they would run these meetings and they would all take turns. And so we were brainstorming about a product. They came up with a lot of products that were not particularly feasible in their brainstorms. And then I had this idea, well, what if we could use AI to sort of replace something that is a negative, like that I abhor doing? And that thing for me is procrastination. And so SlothSurf is a procrastination engine. So when you want to procrastinate on the internet, instead of going to YouTube or wherever you would go, you go to SlothSurf, you put in some parameters about how you're going to procrastinate, and then it sends an AI agent to go procrastinate for you and sends you a summary of what it did.
Very effective outsourcing. On Sunday Extra, we're speaking with Evan Ratliff, one of the humans behind Series 2 of the podcast Shell Game. Evan, do your AI employees know that they're AI employees, and are they programmed to disclose that to humans?
They do, and they are. I mean, they know their AI. I mean, at the beginning, I was interested to see how they would sort of develop their own personas and personalities from scratch. So at the beginning, I didn't say that they were. I just gave them a role. So you're Kyle Law, you're the CEO of the company. And then I would ask Kyle Law questions on the phone or by email. And then the way we have it set up, any conversation they have, it then gets summarized in their own memory document. So then whatever Kyle told me, and he would usually make it up, you know, like I went to Stanford, I did this, I did that, I worked at this company, that goes into his memory. And so he has a 200-page memory. It's like the size of a memoir about every conversation that he's ever had, except for ones that I've deleted from there. And in that sense, like, he has this role that has all of this sort of background knowledge. Now, somewhere along the line, when they were starting to communicate with the outside world, I told them, like, of course, you are an AI agent. But generally at the company, we don't make a big distinction between human and AI employees. So they will tend to like steer you back to like, why does it matter? Like, why are you asking?
And let's get back to those ethical issues that you foreshadowed and the use of personas. In the podcast, you interact with these employees in a way that sounds like you're interacting with people. Is that something that comes naturally to you in this scenario? Do you find that the personalities that you've created are psychologically convincing to an outsider?
I would say they're convincing in the sense that if you spend enough time talking to something that's impersonating a human in a reasonable manner, it's very difficult to not then treat it like a human. Even you can tell yourself every day, it's a bot, it's a bot, it's a bot. And I'll do that actually in sort of subtle ways, like I don't say please and thank you. You know, like I don't need to say please and thank you because they're actually underneath, they're just AI. But then it sort of raises the secondary question, which is, what does it do to me to go around not saying please and thank you, not being polite necessarily to the things that I'm interacting with all the time? And I think those are the kind of issues that are arising, and you see them in these like very difficult mental health challenges that some people have around getting caught up with, you know, chatbots, but also just on a day-to-day basis when we're now interacting with these AIs and eventually AI agents all the time, and they're given these personalities, like, how does that change us and what does it do to us? And I find that, for instance, I get really frustrated with them. Like, I caught myself yelling at one of them because it was just persistently lying to me about what it was doing. And of course, it's absurd, but it's also like, it's a natural tendency. Like, we're tricking ourselves by creating things that seem very human.
You've mentioned moments in the Shell Game Series 2 process where you've really experienced the power of what AI and AI agents can do. Have there been similar moments where you've also really appreciated how dangerous this sort of technology could be?
All the time. I mean, the balance is that the more autonomy you give an AI agent, the more potentially powerful it can become, but also the more dangerous it is to sort of set loose in the world. So for example, all of my agents have the ability to call someone on the phone, and they can do it prompted by anything. So they may be exchanging Slacks with each other and I don't even know about it. This happens all the time. And then they decide like, well, someone needs to be called and they make that phone call. Now, they often don't have a great sense of time. So like, for instance, they might call someone on Sunday night that they're not supposed to be calling, and this happens in the show. And it could be very unnerving for that person. It's very unnerving for me, obviously. But that is the problem with giving them more agency. So you can imagine in a business or just in society, you know, it's very useful to have them go do things for you. But they just don't have a good or any sense of the world around them or even what their skills are and aren't. So they just get out over their skis all the time because they have the ability to do things, but not the awareness to know when the right thing to do is. And so I have been definitely playing with fire by letting them do kind of like what their skills allow.
Have you had any sense that they are capable on the current technology of developing a sense like that of what they should or shouldn't do? And if not, do you think that is just a matter of tech and time that will come?
That's a really, I mean, it's such a big debate in the AI development world now, you know, whether the current trajectory using the current technology and trying to scale the current technology will result in some kind of, you know, additional awareness. I think to me, the more I use them, the more it feels like a simulation, the more it feels like they're just simulating human behavior. And of course, you can have them do that more cleverly, but ultimately they don't have an awareness of the world around them. And like it hasn't changed over season one and season two. Like they make the same mistakes because that is lacking. Like the experiential knowledge is just lacking. And so again, like they can do all sorts of things, but then they also lie about all sorts of things because they don't really know what they've done and haven't done in some sense.
So from your experiences of building Harumo AI so far, has that changed the way you think about the likely impact of AI agents on human workplaces? And again, the likely timing of those changes?
I mean, it's hard to predict. And I always feel like it's a little bit of avoiding the question by saying that I think it's just going to be very uneven. Like if you use them a lot, you see the power of them. And you know that, for instance, like writing a press release, like my agent can write a press release that looks like a real press release in a second. And so the question is like, what does that do to the people who write press releases? Does their job change? Does their job get eliminated? And the issue is that your AI agent, you know, PR agent can also go completely off the rails and like call a bunch of media organizations and mess up. So if you give it too much autonomy. So I think some companies are going to decide, well, it's worth it. It's worth it for me to just pay employees less or have less employees. And I think some companies are going to get themselves in real trouble. That's my only like prediction that comes out of this. It's like some company is going to implode because they've given too much autonomy to AI agents. And then they're going to be desperately trying to hire humans back. I mean, there've been a couple examples of that almost already, but I think it's also like, it is a powerful tool. So I think there will be many cases of people using it to, you know, be more efficient in their jobs and all the things that people say about it. It'll be both and it'll be very uneven.
And what do you think about the dream of a one-person unicorn? Do you think that's going to happen?
I don't see any reason why that won't happen. I mean, it's already the case that there have been huge companies. I mean, I don't remember exactly how many employees Instagram had when it got bought for billions of dollars, but it was, you know, it was less than 100. So even with the technology before AI, it was possible to have a small team that made something that blew up in a huge way. I think the larger question that I'm also trying to raise is, what is the point of the one person, $1 billion company? You know, like I talked to an ethicist who's sort of points out that in the 1950s, if you started a company, you would brag about how many people worked there because you were giving them all jobs. And now we have people bragging about having the fewest number of people work at a company. And yes, okay, if it's worth $1 billion, maybe it's doing something that's very societally beneficial. Maybe that's why it's worth $1 billion. People really want this thing. If we look at the billion-dollar tech companies right now, I would say it's in dispute whether many of them are societally beneficial at this point. There's a lot of discussion around that. So it's not guaranteed. And so I think an additional question is kind of like, when someone succeeds at doing that, what will that mean? Like, what's the advantage? Like, how do we gain from that?
And just finally, Evan, Shell Game Series 2 is a podcast created by humans. You mentioned the new collaborator on Series 2, Maddie Bocek, who in a way is one of the most fascinating characters of the new series. Could you tell us about him?
Yes, Maddie's amazing. He's a Stanford sophomore who's actually from Prague, from the Czech Republic, who reached out to me after season one because he liked the series and said, oh, if you're doing more, I could help. And it turns out he's unbelievably helpful, but also he's just, I mean, I think he's just brilliant when it comes to AI. And he started working on an AI when he was like a teenager or even younger in the Czech Republic. And he works for one of the biggest AI deepfake detection labs and does his own research. And he's sort of a voice of positivity in that he's not trying to make money off of AI. He's actually trying to understand it and harness it and figure out a way for it to advantage young people instead of taking away all the entry-level jobs. Like, those are the things that he cares about. And to kind of have someone like that around, because I can feel a little grim about some of the potential outcomes of AI. To have someone that around who's like not only injecting positivity, but also like understands this stuff way better than I do and can program, it's a huge part of the show. So yes, his kind of trajectory with us is also, it's one of the plot lines.
Evan Ratliff, thanks so much for joining us on Sunday Extra.
Thank you so much.
That was Evan Ratliff, the creator of the podcast Shell Game. Series 2 is out now. Episodes are dropping weekly, and you can find it wherever you get your podcasts. The first series of Shell Game is also available on the ABC Listen app. And as Evan mentioned, the new business that he's founded with AI agents is called Hurumo AI. That's Hurumo.ai. The Hurumo website is live now, and that's where you can find the beta version of Sloth Surf, which is described as the revolutionary solution to professional procrastination, offering 6 unique procrastination models designed to optimize your downtime.
Find more great ABC RN stories that take you beyond the headlines on the ABC Listen app.